We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome back to the Yins No Ball podcast. I'm John Ledger. With me is Brad Spielberger. And we are, we're cranking out another episode because I'll be gone next week. And so we wanted to make sure you guys had enough content to get you through in the meantime. So we are going to talk about centers today for the Steelers, free agents and draft options for the Steelers at center, which I think is actually a very interesting draft crop and free agent crop. So the idea that they couldn't upgrade at center this offseason, like if that is indeed the case and they roll it back and they don't upgrade at center, that is a travesty because there are a lot of options that would be upgrades over Mason Cole. Before we do that though, Brad, how about this quote by Kevin Colbert? How about this anti-analytics guy?
Yeah, it's a beautiful one. It's a classic. We've heard them all. It's just interesting. Like I obviously know that there are people, including at PFF, that probably speak too confidently or like think they have the magic answer. And I don't think that we do. And I think most people here don't think that. But I find it interesting when you hear these like antagonistic quotes from people talking about their own in-house people. I know the analytics people in pretty much every building, they're not like going up to GMs and being like, hey, I know how to like draft smarter than you do. Like, it's just weird that they have this like very like angry like viewpoint of their own in-house analytics team that probably doesn't raise their voice to them at any point ever, at least that from what I've heard. So it's just interesting. Can you measure intangibles? No, that's why they're intangibles. Can you use data?
It's like literally by definition.
Correct.
Let me read the quote. Should I read the quote?
Please do.
Okay, so if people don't know what we're talking about. By the way, Kevin Colbert was interviewed on the North Catholic Athletic podcast, and he was asked about whether analytics are overused in football. He says, I do think they're overused. At the end of my career with the Steelers, obviously it came into play, and I used to encourage our younger scouts and say, keep me up to date, tell me what I'm missing. We had analytics people. I think that's news. I used to challenge them. I said, when you guys can measure the intangibles, let me know, because that's the most important thing. So he went on to say some other things here. Decisions to go for it are on fourth down or other in-game decisions are ones that should essentially be made by gut feeling. He said analytics in that context don't account for the crowd. The crowd.
Ooh, crowd. Crowd, okay.
The big factor.
That's a new variable that I have. Love it.
That is unbelievable. That part I actually had just glossed over. I didn't even notice that. The health of the team or recent player performance.
Yeah, that's
I mean, the health common of a player could matter. Like in a
we
game.
We always get, what if the left guard's hurt? I don't know why left guard, not tackle center. It's always the left guard. That's the most common.
I was thinking more like the quarterback.
Yeah, that would matter. Yeah, but that's always a classic. So that one's run of the mill. Okay.
Yes. Okay. Or recent player performance. If a guy who's good has been bad for the last five plays, he probably might just be bad. That doesn't make any sense. This is his exact quote. You as the coach or you as the player has to be able to make critical decisions under pressure situations. And I don't think there is any analytic that can measure that. I don't think there's an intangible that can measure it. It's just that feel that coach may have to have at a certain point is trust in that player and that player to make that play in a critical situation. So that's pretty much all that he said on it. So never mind the fact that those players that have made that are in position to make those plays and what that coach knows of that player are things that analytics measures, like whether they've been good or not, basically. That's what analytics tells you, but you'd have to actually know what that is. Like, and I'm not even saying that every analytical approach is the best one, like every that you should use an analytic for every decision you make as a GM. But this is what people say who like want to let you know, oh yeah, like we had analytics people in our building. Like, oh, I could draw parallels to other things in our society where this is true used. But oh yeah, we had analytics people in our building. Like we definitely, like, yeah, we're in a, but like, yeah, I don't want them to make any of my decisions for me. It's like, well, okay, well, what are you using them for? You don't even know what they could measure. So how would you ever know to use them? You'd never trust these people. Like you never trust people who told you the analytics would tell you to make this decision or do this or that. Like, and it's just a bad process. Analytics are based on what actually happens in football. They're not just made up numbers. They're based on things that have actually happened. Like things that happened in the history of the game. And so like, yeah, you just don't even, he doesn't even understand what he's talking about. And honestly, derisively talking about it like this way is indicative of the fact that he is afraid of what he doesn't know. Like, and a lot of people are, and just in general, like as a general principle, the things that you don't know tend to scare you to the point where like you ridicule them to make it seem like you ignoring those things isn't as significant as it is. And it's a significant thing that I think has hurt this franchise for a long time. Obviously, Colbert's not the GM anymore, and so some of this is past tense, but it's a big reason why this organization was where it's at. It's a big reason why Mike Tomlin and Colbert work so seamlessly, is that Tomlin sees things very similar to Colbert in this way, and that is a big reason why this organization just hasn't really progressed for years now.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Yeah, I got to add crowd noise to my fourth down decision model. I'll circle back and let you know what that
But then he would also be the same coach in the same breath, say, well, we don't make excuses. We don't do this. But you're making decisions based on crowd noise? Crowd noise. Like,
crowd noise. That's a great. I'm glad you read the full quote because I hadn't seen that either. No, it's funny. It is a boogeyman. Like if I was trying to pitch, you know, data-informed decision-making to a team or try to – like I would never use that word. I would – if I was trying to get a job or trying to build out a department, if I was, you know, maybe a new hire at X team that's kind of behind the times, you can't use the word analytics because now they just slap the word analytics on literally anything they don't like or don't agree with or don't understand, like you said. But no, look, it's a beautiful thing. Here's the thing. I tweeted this the other day because there was all these arguments about it was, you know, the Lions game, what Dan Campbell did. We don't need to really have these arguments anymore or fight these battles anymore. The AFC Championship game, the Chiefs went for it on 4th-and-2 in the middle of the field and scored a touchdown. The Ravens, the next possession, had 4th-and-1 at their own 34-yard line and went for it, and Lamar scrambled for 20 yards, and then they scored a touchdown. There was only one touchdown the rest of the entire game. Like 2 of the 3 scoring drives of the entire AFC Championship game were because teams did things that 10 years ago no one would ever do. So, look, ignore it all you want. You just won't be playing in those games. It's kind of as simple as that. So, you know, I will say this, though. Intangibles do matter, and the personal element and human element, all this stuff does matter. And the Steelers are great drafting compared to the rest of the NFL over the last 20, 25, whatever years. There's no doubt about that. I think the fascinating thing is when Colbert was GM, doing all those things at a high level could get you Super Bowls. Now I think it gets you into the playoffs. And then you face teams that are also doing those things and are you know, digging into the weeds and finding more edge cases and what have you. And those are the teams that are playing in, you know, late January or in February. So, yeah, like it's the Steelers are fascinating because they are still, it's tough to feel as though you need to change your process or do things differently if you look around and say, well, yeah, you know, the Jaguars and the, I don't know, the Bear, like, I don't even know, you know, like these teams have analytics departments and we're more successful than them every year. It's true. It is true. So it's pretty funny, but yeah. Anyway, yeah. Crowd noise.
It's like a humorous crowd noise. We're just going to end every thought. Yeah. All our segues will be crowd noise. it's just a humorous way to evaluate. Like, it doesn't even make any sense. Like comparing yourself to those organizations, being, well, they don't have. Meanwhile, teams and organizations that lean into more analytical approaches are lapping you every year, are winning games in the playoffs, which you're not doing every year, are clearly like building stronger rosters, have better processes than you do, and you're just continuing to say intangibles. And the intangibles line was just hilarious to me, Brad, because not only is it like ridiculous coach speak, GM speak, like old school football speak, because obviously intangibles matter, no question. The whole like point of analytics is you said, yeah, like that's the whole thing with intangibles. Like you can't measure them. That's the idea behind them. Like they're literally unable to, that's the definition. So like acting like you've made some salient point when you say that is just hilarious. Like just love to hear the sound of your own voice type of leadership, which cracks me up. But then just look at it on its face value. Like this guy is touting intangibles as why his strategy is better than that would use analytics. This is the dude who traded up for Devin Bush, which analytics never would suggest to do. Trading up for an off-ball linebacker. Are you kidding me? Devin Bush, who like at times wasn't even trying on the football field for the Steelers. Deontay Johnson, who like, I think he and George Pickens are great players, but the intangibles, like Johnson at least works hard, but Pickens, like intangibles, like that's what told you to draft George Pickens. Chase Claypool. Like, I'm sorry. Like this is, I mean, this is just a ridiculous approach like to drafting, like, because even if it were true and you were just drafting like saints everywhere across the board, it doesn't mean they'd be good ball players, but you aren't even doing that. You're not even doing what you said you're doing. You're saying like acting like intangibles matter to you and all this stuff. You're drafting Chukwuma Okorafor and you're benching him the whole season because of intangibles. Like it's just like, doesn't even make sense as a process. You're not even doing what you're saying you're doing. So you're not even good at your own process. Like, so yeah, you should probably take in some outside noise. And by the way, when you do nail it with a Najee Harris or somebody like that, a Dan Moore, oh, those guys are really, you know, just great football players. We love the way they approach the game. They're really moving that win-loss needle for you, aren't they, Chief? Like, it's just a terrible process. I'm not even saying I like Najee Harris. I hope he plays football in Pittsburgh for a long time as long as he's affordable, but it's just a bad way. It's a bad philosophy. Like you spend a first round pick on Najee Harris because you think he's this great leader and all these other things. And I get it, but like analytics would tell you, it doesn't matter. Like he's not going to move the needle enough at that position. And sure enough, a guy who you, where was Jalen Warren? Was he undrafted? Undrafted. So an undrafted guy ends up being a better player than the guy you took in the first round, because that's the whole, but to look at that and just be like, yeah, we don't need to change anything about our process. Like that, a process that would have said to not do that is not one that could possibly be right. It's just so foolish, and the arrogance is the thing we keep going back to. It's like the arrogance to think that, and now Colbert's gone, but he still feels this way, right? The arrogance to think that like your way is just clearly better than these other ways, and you didn't even have to examine a process that was clearly flawed, because there's just no way anybody else could have superior knowledge of this than you could. And the fact that a head coach and GM operated like that for so long, it worked when you had all the good players already. Then they certainly added some good players. Not like they were good at evaluating talent, which is still a huge part of it. Like I won't say Colbert was ever a bad GM or anything like that, but when it came to time to have to really get detailed about your processes, because if you didn't, this team would not be able to rebuild, right? The teams that are best at kind of reloading again quickly are the ones that are looking really intricately at their process and saying, okay, what do we need to emphasize? What do we need to focus on? And he was just going in, let's draft the best ball player. Like, let's draft the guy with the best that likes football the most. Like, those are the philosophies. Like, and it's just like, no, it's not good enough. Like, that's not a detailed enough approach. You owe it to everybody in your building, and frankly, the fans, to do a better job than that. And he just mailed it in for a long time and said that that was enough and thought that that approach was enough. And it just isn't. That is not. We have better ways to evaluate now. And it's reached past the point of whether like it's a converse. Oh, some, you know, there's good points on both sides. No, like you're wrong if you think the way he does about analytics, and you're right if you feel like they should be a part of your process. And there could be ranges of rightness on how much of the process and which, but you're wrong if you have Kevin Colbert's approach on analytics. And it's no surprise that the organization is where it is today, largely because he refused to let go of things that have been dead for a long time.
The spin to the positive is that, you know, we've talked about it a little bit, but like the current iteration, sure, still has a lot of Kevin Colbert influence. I mean, he's probably was the mentor for every guy still in the building, both coaching and front office. But they are trying to look, they're not going to be the Niners, the Eagles, the Ravens, the Browns anytime soon. But I mean, they hired Andy Weidel from Philadelphia for a reason. They are going to try to at least catch up to some of those juggernaut analytics teams. And again, yeah, it's not your entire process. It's literally you just saying like, you just don't like having additional information to make your decision-making a little bit more informed. That's the thing I'm saying. It's a branding issue. We obviously, you know, at PFF have this conversation 24, like it's just, we've now enabled it to where anything is just like, if you don't like it, or if it's counter to the traditional approach, it's just slap the word analytics on it. And make it terrible and a boogeyman, and you're condescending and you're patronizing. And it's like, mm-hmm. I don't know that in the buildings, I know it's not really what's happening. So I think Pittsburgh, their current group, again, they're not at the forefront, but they're definitely, I don't think they think fully this way either.
And that's why I like Greg Olsen so much. Cause like, I mean, obviously he was way higher level, but I was a football player. Like I'm not a math person at all. Like to me, understanding the game X's and O's wise and like why players do things and evaluating player performance, that's all stuff that's like comes way more naturally to me. Understanding analytics is something I've had to just continue to work at, but I love data and I love the fact that anything that can inform me and add to my process, I'm a big fan of. And that's why I like Greg Olsen's approach. Like he's a ball player. He could be like a lot of these other ball players and just like throw this stuff out or not try to understand it. But instead he's out there reading, he's tweeting stats. He's showing people like, this is why this stuff matters. It's telling us about what actually happened in the game. It's not some made up spreadsheet of numbers. It's telling us about what actually happened in football. Like it's drawing from football data, from things that actually happened on a football field. And so like, he's trying to explain people to, they're a very simple concept, I think, but to why this stuff is valuable and why it makes sense. And people just can't, because there's such this jock culture and energy around football, unfortunately, still like to the point, like they can't accept the fact that math could be a part of that process and make it better. Like they just, the idea is so foreign to them because the idea whole, it goes back so far psychologically, but the idea that like we could do this awesome physical feats athletic performance thing and you math people can, and that makes us better than you, right? That's like gone back in time years and years and years and years, right? Puts us on a higher echelon of human being because we're able to do those things. But now you're trying to come in our world and this is our world. And that it literally goes back that deep. And people may chuckle at that and be like, I don't know if it's that deep. Like I believe that with all my heart. Like I see people, you could pick all kinds of walks of life and pull this kind of behavior out. We happen to be in football, and because it's a sport, people take it lighthearted. They don't think it's serious. The reason I get fired up about it is because at the end of the day, like it's a devaluing of people and it's an overvaluing of yourself above other people. And that leads to like brokenness in society that like, if we probably don't have time for on this show, but like it's that kind of thinking, and that just leads to a lot of just brokenness and everything that we're a part of. And so the more we can get it out, better, and that includes in football. I love to see that changing, and I hope that it continues to. And I agree with you completely. I think it is going to change in Pittsburgh. I think it's going to lead to a breaking point between Mike Tomlin and the Steel and Omar Khan in the front office eventually. And you know, hope we'll see if ownership stays out of that. But I think it is going to lead to a lot of those things because I don't think they're going to be like the Ravens necessarily, but I think they're going to continue to move in that direction of trying to look at things through an analytical lens in order to make decisions as an organization.
For sure. Right. Yeah, no, there's a spectrum, no doubt about it. You don't have to be, you know, at the very, very far end of the scale. Yeah, it's just, it's kind of funny too, because I also, like, you know, we were talking, here's a good example. We were talking about, like, the DBs they like. They probably have athletic thresholds for positions they draft. That's analytics. Kevin Colbert's like, yeah, we don't take corners that have arms that are less than 30 inches long, or our tackles need to be at least 6'4". Like, why did you arrive at that? You looked at historical success and historical outcomes of players, right, and then you cross-compared it to their measurements, and they said, oh, there's a much higher hit rate if you take a corner whose arms are 30 inches long. That's analytics. Like, you know, it's funny. Like, Belichick was talking about, like, you know, using tendencies of opponents to kind of find, like, you know, every time they were in 12 personnel with a, I don't know, a pistol formation, they ran the ball 85% of the time. That's analytics. Like, it's when you put it in just the football context, I think they're like, yeah, we're doing advanced scouting. We're footballing. It's like, nah, I mean, yeah, you're using data to inform your decision making. That's right. What it is.
Yeah, and analytics also never chooses. They never claim to be 100% right. It doesn't, like, if you only draft tackles with this arm length, you will never miss one, and you will always hit one. Like, that's how people treat it and act like it is. And they act like, oh, that nothing can claim that. We'll go with this philosophy instead. No, it's data processing. So, like, if 95% of tackles with, you know, sub 33 inch arms, like, never become, you know, irregular starters in the NFL or start 20 plus games, or, you know, choose whatever measure you choose to look at. I mean, Pro Bowls are broken, but that would be like a higher end way of looking at it, but become like starters in the NFL, or you could use PFF grades or whatever, like, to evaluate by. If that never happens with a player with sub 33 inch arms as a tackle, then, like, you can still draft that player to play tackle for you, but you have to understand that player, if he hits, will be an outlier out of hundreds of examples of players who failed in that capacity. So you are betting against literal odds because you believe so much in that player. For that, so you can choose to take those chances for sure and see if that works for you. Like, Antonio Brown is a good example, right? Like, his physical and athletic attributes. Now, I think there's range on that compared to, like, wide receivers. Like, we've seen there, I don't think analytics would tell you, like, oh, because you ran a 4.5 at 5.10, like, you can't be drafted. Like, I think there's enough examples of players like that hitting that it wouldn't have said that. But, like, he's an outlier, certainly in terms of his testing and his physical stature, to become as great as he was, at least. And I think that, but things like arm length to tackle, and, like, why we talk about that kind of stuff, the three cone at edge rusher, and why we've talked about those kind of stuff, a lot of those things have been found to be disqualifiers. And it doesn't mean that a player can never hit, but their likelihood of hitting is just way less. And so we are all playing the odds because the draft is a broken process. And so just an example of, like, how that information is supposed to be processed. If you understand that none of this is 100% chance and all of it is playing odds, then you are going to want to take something that gives you the information in order that will tell you what the better odds are. And whether you always make that decision or not could depend on a lot of different things, but it should absolutely be informing your decision-making as a GM. And if it isn't, you're making mistakes, like, period. You're just missing a huge thing that will help you.
Yeah. So, you know, he even said it's, he's aged beyond it. And, you know, the new crop can figure it out.
New crops, yeah,
I think they will.
This is past angst. I'm just working it all out. This is, my therapist says this is good for me.
Right.
So.
Right. This is like, it's like when you your team, like, fails in the playoffs, and you read, you know, the article from The Athletic comes out, like, a year, 2 years later, and then there's internal turmoil, and you're like, God, like, I knew I could tell the vibes were off or something like that. You know,
I knew they didn't like Russell Wilson for a reason.
Yeah, exactly.
My favorite comment, by the way, is, from Paul Rohde. He says, Jarvis Jones was a sack monster in college. That's all the analytics I need, buddy. That is such a funny one.
That's great.
Because Jarvis Jones is, like, one of the peak examples for this, probably just, like, his athletic testing and then going up against his production and reputation, like, as a, you know, grinder or whatever. I don't, you know, and just how miserable of an NFL player he was. All right, let's talk about the future, though, because you're right. I actually am. This is why a couple people asked this actually a while ago. They were like, why are you guys so optimistic all the time that Khan will turn this thing around, will get us on the right track? Well, you've definitely got some inside information there a little bit in terms of, like, knowing the process a little bit and how Pittsburgh's currently thinking about things and some of the things they want to try and do. Like, you've definitely seen behind the curtain a little bit, and we don't get into details on that because that's stuff we won't necessarily talk about in the process. But there's enough there to inform us that, like, they're really thinking about a lot of, like, different approaches to things, which is encouraging. This past draft was encouraging, I think, just valuing positions, you know, whether or not you want to argue that Broderick Jones is the right pick or not, I think is definitely up for debate. But they valued like difference making positions, right? Pass rusher, defensive difference maker with Benton and corner, obviously. Broderick Jones, athleticism mattered. So I think that there was good process behind those picks, even if the player evaluation part, you're always going to quibble on that at times with people. Because I didn't think Broderick Jones was worthy of that draft selection. We'll see. Time will tell if he is. There were flashes that were encouraging. But so I think some of those things are definitely interesting. I think this will be an organization that continues to piece together at linebacker and probably at running back when that time comes. They obviously inherited a great running back situation, but I don't think they're going to spend at those two positions, like similar to Philly, like not spend major assets at those positions. If they get an opportunity to somehow land like an elite player or something, maybe that happens, but you're not going to see them trading up for a Devin Bush or something like that, I don't think, taking a Najee Harris in the first round. And so, yeah, you're going to avoid some disaster situations, I think, like that. And if you're going to miss, it's going to be missing big. So overall, I'm excited and encouraged about the current direction of the Steelers from a front office perspective. I do think there's a lid on things until they can get that same cohesiveness with the coach. And I'm not sure that Tomlin's willing to be that guy to change and to be that guy. We'll see. Time will tell. He gets obviously going to get an opportunity to do that. I just will kind of believe it when I see it in that regard.
The Broderick Jones thing, I know it's not the main point you're making, but it's an interesting thought, again, to our previous conversation. So you had Paris Johnson at 6, Darnell Wright at 10. The Steelers trade up to get him at Broderick Jones at 14. The next tackle off the board was Anton Harrison at 27. And then you could argue the next tackle drafted was Wanya Morris at 92nd overall by Kansas City. Like, it was, you know, there are guys like a Matthew Bergeron who played tackle in college, but he was a clear guard in the NFL. And that's where he played for, what was it, Atlanta this past year? So, like, that was, again, a thought process of, not that you always want to be, you know, like, making decisions based on your fear of guys getting lost or stuff like that. But they may have sat there and been like, we need a starting tackle, and if we don't take one now, we miss on this guy, and maybe we don't like Anton Harrison that much. There is not an answer. Like, we need to go start calling Jason Peters or something to figure out a different alternative. Like, it was, you know, so I think it was, again, kind of an informed process of, you know, because they don't trade up very often. I know you mentioned Devin Bush, but they tend to just stick at their own spot and pick who they pick. And frankly, I think even that is a sign where, you look, trading down is generally what you want to do. But like we said, if you're going to do it for a premium position, a young, athletic, starting caliber tackle, then I think that's, you know, like there are instances where you're less perturbed by it. And I remember, I think I tweeted this out, actually. It was one of the, like, cheaper trade-ups in that range in a while. Like, it did not cost the Steelers. If you compare all trade-ups in the 15 to 20 range, it was not a particularly expensive trade. So, yeah, I mean, it's another good example. And I do think the positional value thing is huge. And the Eagles and Weidel, that's always been their bread and butter. And Pittsburgh gets that. I just think you still do see your Terrell Edmunds picks, your Devin Bush pick. You know, like, things still fall through the cracks that just would never happen in some other buildings.
Right, exactly. And that's the thing. Colbert actually was a good evaluator of talent. And the fact that he and Tomlin did see similarly allowed a lot of cohesiveness at the top of the Steelers organization. So when they had all the all-pros and the studs, it like did allow a lot of stability there, like, for sure. Like, and there was a value to that. But over time, like, that was always going to deteriorate and fall apart because there wasn't a good process behind it. And so hopefully moving forward, either with Tomlin or with another head coach in the future, that process, that stability can exist again with a better process behind it, one that's a little more long lasting, has more sustainability. Like, that's the hope. And yeah, I'm encouraged that I think that from an offseason front office perspective, at least, that'll be the direction for now. And then we'll see if that happens or not over the course of time in the coaching level, in the game level. When we talk about these games, maybe I won't always get so worked up. All right. You want to talk about centers?
Let's do it.
Mason Cole, what's going to happen here, Brad? Mason Cole, this is going to terrify people, but bear with me here. I'm going to get to more positive things. Mason Cole is, in some ways, Brad, kind of similar to the centers that Arthur Smith has had in the past. He likes guys that can move, and the guys he had in Atlanta could certainly move, whether it was Dahlman or who was the other guy they drafted? Hennessy, like, who didn't end up being a center, ended up being a guard. There may have been one other one he had there too, actually. But he was having guys that could move, guys, he get on space. That is where Cole was at his best. And he didn't necessarily care as much, or Arthur Smith didn't necessarily care as much about the fact that they weren't great in pass protection. They had their weaknesses there. Ask him to display somebody off the ball and move vertically, and you probably weren't getting a lot of success. And so I'm not saying they're going to keep Mason Cole, but I am saying that Mike Tomlin clearly loves this dude. I don't know how can you? His snaps aren't even good. Like, I just, there's no defense for keeping Mason Cole, but there's no defense for some things that the Steelers do. And this is, could be one of them. What's the contract situation like with Mason Cole in terms of evaluating him and how much they'd save and things like that?
Yeah, like you said, there's no way X happens. I just think that, yeah, and then we talked about it, but the cuts that happened, their first wave of cuts with Trubisky and Okorafor and Harvin, you know, these guys could have been included too, in theory. So that they're not, you know, they're not dead yet per se. There's still plenty of time. But anyway, Mason Cole, starting center for your Pittsburgh Steelers. Where are we at here? All right. So if the Steelers cut him, they would clear 4.75 mil. And they would only carry a very small dead cap hit, about a 1.5 mil. So, you know, financially, it's a no-brainer. I think we talked about it. He is Titans-esque or Arthur Smith-esque, like Aaron Brewer, who's a penny free agent, who we'll talk about in a little bit here. Cole is, like, similar. He's a, you know, he can play a little bit of guard, probably should be a center, but like you said, isn't a very good snapper and isn't particularly strong, so might lose even more reps as a guard, but is a decent mover at the second level as a, you know, athletic interior offensive lineman. But I'm not really comfortable paying that price, you know, of about what, 5 mil to keep Mason Cole on my team next year. He just, his play did not warrant getting paid, yeah, 4.75 mil by any stretch.
I agree. There's just no way this guy can start for you. He doesn't even stay, he's not even stable as a snapper of the football. You save money, even if it's just a little bit, like we're getting moving on from him. I mean, it's just like, it's as bad as no brainer as it gets. He is at least, like, apparently is, you know, intangible. So he's at least that, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
We don't even necessarily see that, but I guess that's how the organization feels about him. But yeah, it's just not, it's not working. He's not good at his position, which matters, I think. So let's operate from the premise, so with putting it out there for fans that we could end up being wrong, but let's operate from the premise that the Steelers do end up doing the smart thing and moving on from Mason Cole. What are the free agent options that appeal the most to you as I look at some of the options out there? Your top, just to give your top ranked guys here that you have in your, in the top, is it still 150 or did you expand yet?
We'll expand soon, next week, but it's 150
expansion
right now.
Expansion coming next week. And updates maybe, or there's some up guys you'll update?
We'll be updating, yep, the rankings, the projections, all that.
I was looking at Snead today and I was wondering if you think he'd get more than 17.5 now, or do you still, if you still think 17.5 million per year?
And might go up a little bit. He still is, though, a 27-year-old corner. Yeah. I mean, he was incredible. It's more just, you know, it probably will go up a little bit, but it's not going to be, like, for me at least, and I'm happy to be wrong. I'm not going to put, you know, it's not going to start with a two. I'll put it that way.
Okay. Yeah. I figured not. I said 17, I said on the podcast, I was just on 17.5 to 19, I think would be his.
Yeah. Yeah.
His range, probably. Connor Williams, you have as the number one center, 37th overall in the top 150. 1 year, $6 million. Obviously, had the torn ACL in week 14. So that's going to, he might be the best player, but what does that look like in the recovery side? That's going to affect his price tag for sure. So interesting to think about there. Andre James, the Raiders center, you have him at 3 years, $9 million per year type of contract. Lloyd Cushenberry, you have 57th year. The Broncos center has actually kind of put it together. I mean, he's actually had I think, a really good year. Even when I watched of Denver this year, I was like, man, he's like physically have his size and be as good as he's been. I think it's has been really impressive, especially in pass protection. But 4 years, 14.5 million or 14.28 million per year for that one. Aaron Brewer, you mentioned, that's one we'll talk about here, you know, his development and whether he fits or not. Tyler Biadasz from Dallas. It seemed like he was on his way to being like one of the top paid guys like a couple years ago, back in 2021 maybe. And then it just hasn't quite been as clean since then. And so he's down there a little bit further. Coleman Shelton is down there, 97th. He's played for the Rams. He's been a guard too, I think.
Yep.
Evan Brown for Seattle. So those are kind of the names that we're thinking about. Anybody that jumps out to you?
Yeah. So the Williams one is fascinating. Like you said, torn the ACL, but midseason, like he probably could be ready for early on in the season. I would love to get an update there, because he should be a center, but he can't play guard too. And so I mentioned, you know, Samalo is probably not going to be like this contract Samalo is currently playing on, the 3 year deal, is probably the extent of his Steelers career, I would guess. And so maybe Williams' position flex is interesting. And to me, he was like the best mover at the second level, like so good at like cutting off the backside of run plays, reach blocks. Like really, he's he's a center in a guard's body. And I know in Dallas, they obviously played him at guard. They let him go. They weren't, I guess, stoked with his play. But his anchor could be better, I suppose. But I just think he's an absolutely perfect, perfect fit in exactly what, Miami was doing in the run game. And that, of course, does mirror what Arthur Smith wants to do. So the health there is fascinating because, if you do explore a buy low, give the guy a one-year flyer, let him rehab in your building and rebuild his strength and get confident again, and then explore a multi-year deal, depending how that goes, I think that could be fascinating. For James, to me, he's more of like a gap scheme guy. Not a great athlete, but a good player, a good pass protector. Like, he'd be a massive step up as a pass blocker at center over Mason Cole, no question about it. But I do wonder how Arthur Smith would view him as a fit in the run game. It's funny, Steelers, before they hired Arthur Smith, if they stuck with a similar offense, I might have said Andre James was, the number one target I had for the team. He really, I think, would have fallen in that bucket for me. He can, the Raiders' run game was diverse, but it was a lot of, gap and hat on a hat type concepts. But he's a good player. Christian Berry's contract is massive. Maybe I'm too big there, but I did kind of fall in love with the athleticism, the upside. It's a young early draft pick that did kind of put everything together. Always been a good pass blocker, but was better as a run blocker this year. And just a good player out of LSU that I think, was one of the best centers in the NFL this year. So anyway, Aaron Brewer is the first one. I mentioned him already. Mm-hmm. I guess him and Arthur Smith maybe only crossed paths for a year. And Brewer's story is pretty fascinating. He literally came in at 270 pounds at the combine I didn't even get invited to the combine. He was totally off the radar. He probably did. But anyway, came in, they added some weight to him. He was actually a left guard for the most part before this past year when he kicked inside to center. And I thought was good. Same thing. Good athlete. Really, really good in space. I think got better this year at getting off of, double teams and combos and getting to the second level, detaching, getting to linebackers, and kind of clearing rushing lanes for Derrick Henry and Tajay Spears. I think he'd make a ton of sense. And then you mentioned, Coleman Shelton plays, it can play ball positions, has played inside zone, outside zone, gap, all that good stuff. And last but not least, Evan Brown was the Seattle Seahawks center this year. Shane Waldron does run a fairly similar offense. But anyway, my biggest thing is this is a pretty flush position. There are also some guys that are on the list that'll probably be on the top 250, whatever. I don't think there's an excuse not to cut Mason Cole for $4.75 million. And maybe you do go spend $7-8 a year at center, but it's all right, we're upgrading an extremely important position, which you also can further justify by being we have quarterback uncertainty. So having an established, good, smart, quality center, goes such a long way. I think it makes a lot of sense to prioritize that position in free agency in particular.
Yeah, I think it would be a surprise to see James or Cushenberry, just knowing those schemes a little bit, knowing the player types a little bit. If Connor Williams were healthy, I would think that one would be one maybe they actually would. Perhaps he is a fit. He finally kind of seems like he's found his spot at center, and he's been pretty good, I think, the last couple of years. Similar to most of the centers that Smith has had, and even Pittsburgh's had recently. His anchor is probably the biggest issue with him. There's just guys that can be more powerful than him, but he was a tackle in college. And I remember I just wasn't that big a fan of him as a tackle on his tape. And then he just kept moving around. It seems like they finally found a role for him that he's bought into, and he's played well, and he's still just 26 years old. So maybe if his medical's not an issue, but it's not really like the Steelers to take those kind of risks, and we'll see how they assess it. If he's really cheap and, all of those things make it a possibility. Brewer, I think, definitely in terms of a scheme fit, seems like a possibility, even if there was some overlap there. That's an interesting one to note. Also, how seriously will teams 3 years and $6.6 million? I mean, for him, that's a nice contract if he gets $12 million guaranteed. I think
I would agree. It was on the high side for me. In part, and we'll pivot over a little bit. So, the draft class doesn't have a ton of options. There are some players teams like, but I think a lot of people thought Cedric Van Pran out of Georgia was going to be a first or not first round pick, but second, maybe early third. I don't think he's really viewed in that light anymore. Maybe he still goes. and we've seen the last couple of years, there's been a real big push for centers. I think it's becoming viewed as a bit like less of a, I don't know, put your smallest interior offensive lineman who's kind of smart and can just like hike the ball and hold up. You see, like, you know, last year, like guys like Juice Scruggs and some of these guys go earlier and earlier and earlier in the draft, and just become more of a kind of a pressing spot. But anyway, that I don't think the draft class this year is nearly as good or perceived that way. So a lot of these contracts are pretty strong in free agency, and maybe they're a little bit too strong. But yeah, I would agree. Brewers, that's that, I'm not, that that's as high as that one's going to go. But you know, good movable interior offensive lineman. I think we'll always get something.
Yeah, this seems like I mean, I think it's a pretty exciting center class. Some of these guys will be moving to center. It's always hard to evaluate this because it's, you know, so there's the guys who played center in college and there's guys who are just going to play it in the NFL, and we're not going to see, like, Graham Barton was a, what was he, a tackle at Duke, and now he's getting a look at guard and center. You know, a lot of people have him. I think I saw Dane Brugler has him as his number two center, I think. It's like, well, he played tackle. Like, you know, so it's like one of those things. He never played a snap of center. Every snap of his college career was a left tackle. So it's just like, it's just a projection, I guess, is the best way to describe it. So Barton is one, though, that I definitely have my eye on for Pittsburgh. Size wise, maybe he is more of a guard. Like, I don't know how many 6'5" centers are out there. Or did he, maybe he came in shorter than that at the Senior Bowl. I didn't look. But yeah, he's one that I would definitely have my eye on, just in terms of movement skills, athleticism. He's tenacity too. He's a finisher. He's not the biggest guy, and so maybe that will, again, that for this scheme, for what we've seen Arthur Smith look for, that hasn't factored as much. Like, they haven't looked necessarily for the biggest guy at center. I'm sure they'd want some combination of traits. Obviously, it was always ideal, but Barton is definitely one. The Duke tackle that's probably going to play guard or center. And the NFL is one that I'd have my eye on. I don't know that, you know, the one that's pretty popular to Pittsburgh right now is Jackson Powers Johnson. The JPJ first round pick you were telling me before went on to Pittsburgh is one that's getting a lot of love right now. What do you think of JPJ? I saw some of his Senior Bowl tape. I've seen some of his game tape now at this point. What are your thoughts on him as a potential Pittsburgh Steeler?
I love him. I think he's awesome. I think he is the
Yeah.
best, you know, interior offensive lineman, or I guess center in particular in this class. Big, physical, like wants to pancake you on pretty much every rep that he can. Is a good mover. He's like 6'4", 320, I think is what he's listed at. I don't know if he came in smaller at the Senior Bowl, but you saw his anchor, like his reset ability in some of these pass rush, you know, one-on-ones he did in Mobile. Really, really good. If he would lose his spot, he would very quickly recover. I think there's a smartness there to him as well. You can tell in some of the Oregon games, like they put a lot on him, and that offense, you know, he's snapping it in shotgun 90% of the time, and then doing various different things that Bo Nix can run around for 3 seconds. So he's a stud. I'm with you. I don't know if they're going to use their first round pick, you know, on a center, but if they were, like, he's the guy in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that's the thing with JPJ that fascinates me most is that sometimes these types of prospects end up higher up the board. Like, for people during this time of the draft, Senior Bowl is the only pre-draft event that's happened. He's one of the best players at the Senior Bowl. He's one of the best offensive linemen. He's a grinder, all these things. And then you get further along the process, it's like, well, he's still a center. Like, his physical traits are, you know, he's got this kind of, somebody said, I thought it was really funny and spot on, he's got the SpongeBob SquarePants like build to him.
Oh yeah.
It's like, oh
Oh
yeah,
yeah.
that's pretty accurate. Like, how are teams gonna see it? Does it even matter? What's his testing like? Like, all this, like, is he like the type of center you take like that high? You know, I think that's where teams are gonna kind of differentiate on that probably. What Linderbaum was seen really early in the pro, like before, the year before, I think, as like one of the best center prospects in a long time. Didn't he go in the 20s? Am I
He
remembering that
went
right?
25th. No, it's a good shout.
25th, yeah.
Right. And he was
I
a
mean, like, that's the kind
generational center prospect,
of
literally.
right, generation, yeah. This is a probably better center. I mean, this center class is pretty decent. I could see him falling on the board some. Now, is he going to make it to where the Steelers pick in the second round? 52? Is that?
Right. I don't think he makes 52, but you're right. No, it's a very, very, very good point. Like, you could not have had a higher, like, you know, profile than Linderbaum. I know he measured a little bit smaller than I guess people expected, but I mean, he's like a 96 grade for us. Like he was off the charts in everything. So it's a good point. It's a good point.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's the Kia Summer Sticker Sales Event, so give your friends something to look at. Like a B&B with an ocean view, an endless field of wildflowers, or a sunset that needs no filter. Make this a summer to share and save with a capable Kia SUV or powerful sedan. See your local Kia dealer or visit Kia.com to learn more. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-334-KIA for details. Always drive safely. Sale applies to purchase of specially tagged 2024 vehicles only. Quantities are limited. Must take delivery by 7/8/24.
Yeah, I mean, the Steelers picked 51. So is he going to make it to 51? It's possible. It's a center. Like, it just, it could happen. I don't think it necessarily is them. They need to take a 20. I always have said, like, I would have taken Creed Humphrey. I think just I didn't like that draft class at all. And Creed was one of the few players I did when said where they took Najee in that draft. You know, I just felt like I don't, center's not that valuable position. And so I get it. But, you know, evaluating against the other positions that will likely be on the board in this draft, should they take a center in the first round? Maybe that's not the best process. However, I still think there's a lot of value to risk signing like Kevin Colbert in taking a really good player there that you know is going to be a good player. And I think that JPJ, man, he was awesome at the Senior Bowl. Like the balance, the strength to recover, like you said, when it seemed like he was going to lose the rep early on, just to grip strength is, I think, a really underrated interior offensive line. Grip strength is a trait that I like love seeing a lot of the greats have unbelievable grip strength, you know, and so I think that that's a really great trait of his. So there's a lot that I like about JPJ for sure. If he were Pittsburgh Steelers, I think it'd be a good pick. It's just value compared to other players on the board, all those kinds of things, I think, is where you can get into stickier situations. But he was in, I mean, that they ran a lot of zone, right?
Definitely.
At Oregon. And so, I mean, there's a difference between all of this, and there's landmarks, and, you know, he's played right guard also. He's played some left guard. Like, he has kind of experience and could be kind of a versatile guy, but he would definitely be an interesting option. Jackson Powers Johnson, yeah, one to keep an eye on for sure at center. How about Zach Frazier from WVU? He's another one, I think, that stood out to a lot of people.
And he's one where I think, like, so he's the one who, honestly, he just broke his leg in that late game of the season. I don't think it's like a, you know, torn ligament or anything like that. If people haven't seen the video, he literally, like, crawls off the field because he tries not to force his team to use a timeout because it's, like, late in the game and, like, they need all their timeouts. So he literally army crawls with a broken leg to get off the field. Kevin Colbert, he could see that on film. I'll tell you right now. You don't need any analytics to tell you about that. So. But all jokes aside, he's a mauler. He's physical too. I was a big fan of his. I think you get him. Honestly, I think it's like his draft starts around the Steelers' first or second round pick. Right? Yeah. I think that's like probably his like ceiling. And then his floor, maybe, you know, in the third round, they're sitting there. He's still potentially there. I'm a huge fan of his. I think he's less of an athlete, but he's strong. You mentioned grip strength. You mentioned he gets his hands on you, and you kind of just seem swallowed, but not in a holding manner, he's just a bear. I'm a big fan of his.
Yeah, wrestling background is – I love that when you can get it.
There you go. I'm not surprised. I didn't know that, but I'm not surprised.
Yeah, wrestling – I love that part of it. When you can get it, I think it's a very valuable – just hand usage is just – it's very similar to, like, how you use your hands and, you know, if you're strong enough. And he's also got that low center of gravity frame, which I don't think you necessarily – like, you can't be a taller center, but I do have seen it hurt guys also at times. So, yeah, he's one that I definitely have on my radar. I very much could see him being a Pittsburgh Steeler. Like, and I can't wait to actually – I'm just telling you before we went on air, I think I'm going to do centers next. I'm doing corners right now and actually have a podcast coming out sometime this week. I don't know when I'll post it, but with Rashad McGinnis, we're going to talk through some of the top corner prospects. So fans can listen to that one over if they're subscribers at Audibles and Analytics. I think it's like $5 a month or something like that, or even less if you do the yearly subscription. It's like $4 a month for a year. So it's pretty cheap, but if you need help with that, just let me know. If you want your financial situation, need that assistance, that we'll be glad to help you out with that. But I'm going to look at the centers next, I think, because I just feel so strongly that the Steelers are probably going to upgrade at some point at center. and probably this offseason seems like there's a lot of good options. You could save money from a bad center and move on. And Frazier is certainly one that's high on my list. Barton is as well. Powers Johnson. Those three are all ones that I'll be taking a long look at. Cedric, is it Van Praan?
Van Praan? Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe it is Van Praan. Maybe I was trying to be too fancy with Prawn.
Yeah, you were, it was very like sophisticated, like, of you.
He's been the one that I think was early in the process. Center one, like this guy's an animal. And then it feels like as time's gone on that he's kind of fallen off a little bit. The intangibles box from what I've heard, he checks. What about the rest of his game, though? I don't know if you've gotten a chance to look at him.
I haven't watched the film yet for this past year. I watched a little bit, actually, of his, you know, penultimate season because the Bears are also in dire, dire need of a center. And, yeah, he was the guy. Everyone's like, oh, I just take him in, like, the second round. And I'm like, if you use a top 50 pick on a center, they better be a phenomenal, phenomenal player. I don't really know why people were that much in love with him. I think it was just kind of like we heard his name a lot. He was on a good Georgia offensive line. I mean, look, he is young. Like, he's a true junior. Like, he's coming out, I think, at like 22 years old, like, which isn't young, I guess, but it's not old. He's solid in space, I thought, like, that, you know, but I don't know. I wasn't overly impressed. He's a good football player. I wasn't sitting there being like, oh, I got to have this guy on my team.
Yeah, it seems like the athleticism and the physical traits won't be as good. Like, he's definitely shorter armed, it seems like, and there's an expectation that physically he's not going to be like what every team's looking for. But I need to get to the tape on him. I have not studied that. Actually, Georgia will probably be one of my first stops because Amarius Mims is getting mock drafted to the Steelers like crazy, the right tackle for Georgia. So he'll probably be another one that I look at. I don't know how many of these other guard converts would be good centers. You know, it seems like most of these guys, like Fautanu from Washington, Jordan Morgan could play. I mean, these are guys that have played tackle and will probably move inside. Cooper Beebe from Kansas State is another big guy guard. Puny from Kansas. I don't know that any of these guys. I mean, maybe Christian Haynes. It's possible he did get to snap some at the Senior Bowl. He was actually pretty good at the Senior Bowl. He's not that big of a guy, so he's 6'2", 313. He's more of the center size. Teams tend to want to move those smaller offensive linemen to play center, so maybe he could be a fit. I will say the snaps at the Senior Bowl, now I don't know how much experience he has, but they were pretty rough, so it would be a development thing for him, I think.
I think he's like 24, 25 years old, too.
Oh, wow.
Maybe I'm making that up. Maybe I'm thinking
it's always happens. The players who are good at the Senior Bowl, you're like, oh, man, that guy's good. Like, and there's like, oh, he's 25, yeah. Like, oh, okay, so he's like – significantly older than a lot of the guys he's playing against, like in strong.
Yeah, probably. I could be making that up. That could be Christian Mahogany, who's I think a graduate who also had a phenomenal Senior Bowl per a lot of reports. I saw a couple good reps. I don't remember specifically, but he's like, I think he's gonna be 24 on draft night. But anyway, Haynes good. Haynes a good mover. Really, really good. Like would be a fit for Arthur Smith. And now that I'm looking at it, it says he's a redshirt sophomore. So I don't see how he'd be 24 years old. So maybe
Redshirt
senior. So, okay. Yeah. So he's probably on the older side.
Let's see. Christian Haynes, UConn. Did you try looking it up? We can't find his age.
I'm looking up right now, but when you can't find it, that's always the.
Yeah, it's always old guys.
Yeah. There's always a reason.
I don't see anything. Yeah.
It's stalked the social media. He's like 24. Yeah.
I love when people like stalk the social media and they find out when people wished him happy birthday.
Yeah.
It's like,
this
is wild.
Yeah,
I ain't got time for that.
So anyway, he's on the older side for sure.
He's the number one guard for PFF.
He's a good player, no question about it. I agree with Trevor on that one. I haven't watched the whole class, but I see why he says that.
And Dane has him as a number five guard, but some of these guys, I bet he has a guard that Trevor's probably got at tackle, like
Fautanu.
Morgan, Jordan Morgan was playing tackle. I thought he played tackle. Or at least in one-on-ones more at the Senior Bowl. 6'4", 312. Maybe he will be a guard. I guess.
Oh, that's small. I thought Jordan Morgan was listed bigger than that, at least.
Oh, maybe he was bigger than that at the Senior Bowl. I don't know.
No, I think in, you know, classic college listing fashion, he was like 6'6", 325, whatever. But anyway.
Yeah, so we'll see. I mean, even Christian Mahogany from Boston College is definitely a possible switch. And so, yeah, there could be some other options, but right now these are the guys that are on our radar. And so looking forward to watching many of them, I think. But this is a position that they need to get better at, and I don't think it necessarily has to break the bank to do that. That's the thing. Like, I think that this could be a situation where You know, they continue to add talent, and they could draft somebody and sign a cheaper free agent. You know, if it's Connor Williams on a 1 year or something like that, it's not an approach Pittsburgh typically takes to double dip like that. But it's one that could work for them, I think, if they decided to go down that road.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. Also, why did Marius Mims like not play ever? Injuries?
He played like 8 games, right? Was it an injury? He didn't start before this year, right? Because they had other guys. And
yeah. Oh, because I guess they had, what's his name? Not only Paris, but I mean, not Paris. Broderick and DeJuan. So then, yeah. And then he only played like 300 snaps this year.
Wait, DeJuan was Ohio State.
No, he was Ohio State too. Well, I'm just blending Ohio State and Georgia tackles.
Blending tackles. Why didn't he? Only had 8 career starts in college. Yeah, I don't know. Doesn't say. Maybe he couldn't beat out anybody before.
And they have great players. It's just
I mean, it is Georgia. So
one it's Georgia.
They're not necessarily.
It's not as big of a red flag for sure.
Right.
Anyway,
oh, he's got noticed. Tyler Guyton. We're going to talk about tackles probably in the next pod once I get back, I think. But because we'll try to figure out what the heck the Steelers are doing. Like, obviously, no Chooks. So, but they love Dan Morse. They might not even take it. The tackle is the weird one. Like, they are getting mock tackles in the first round, and they could take a tackle in the first round, or they could not take a tackle at all, like in the offseason.
Right.
They,
right.
Like, those are our starters. Like, and we're not
we
even
got our guys.
Like, you know, we might re sign Dan Moore. No, I'm just kidding.
Might have to give him an extension.
We can't do this with Dan Moore. Not another year. If Dan Moore and Mason Cole are starting for the Steelers, not because of injury, let's say, if they're starting for the Steelers by choice, week one of the 2024 NFL season, we're done with the podcast.
Bold claim. I was going to say, like, then they better have, like, Legarius Sneed and, like, you know, they better be spending like gangbusters elsewhere. Yeah. It's the only justification. You just want to call it a day and just wrap up shop. That's fair. That's fair.
I can't watch these. I love O-line play. I can't watch these clowns play again.
Dan Moore,
there's a chance. There's a real chance.
He's a better chance than,
That's disgusting.
Brutal.
Hey, look, you got to control costs. I, at least with Dan Moore, you could say, like, he's very cheap. Like, he's bad, obviously, but, like, he's cheap, and there's not – I mean, it's true that free agency is – like, they're not going to go pay big money for somebody in free agency. So you could say, like, who are we going to get that's better? I mean, obviously, the draft would be an option. But even if they draft somebody, Moore probably will start the season and Broderick will play out
right.
of position
oh, yeah.
again.
Absolutely.
So you're still looking at –
get ready for some Dan Moore tape, baby. It's coming.
4 years of watching Dan Moore, the turnstile. Brutal. Rough. Okay, that wraps up our thoughts on the center group, I think, and our analytics rants. So we will be out of commission next week because I'll be away on a cruise. You'll be recovering after the season, getting ready for free agency and launching this top 250 probably or whatever. So it actually comes at probably a good time for you too. We'll take this mini break. And then we will come back, get the content hard, and continue to get these podcasts out there and wrap up these position groups before we get to free agency and possible trades and like all the new league year and all that kind of stuff is coming up. The draft, we're going to get into these draft prospects a lot. I'm hoping to sneak some tape watching. If Brittle let me, I'm going to watch some tape. Trevor's going on this cruise with us. So Trevor and Alyssa. So hopefully that like they're cool with us like sneaking and watching some tape, you know. So,
I know you guys are going to be watching some tape. I'll be watching tackles. We talk about a pre-show, so I'll be very ready for the tackle conversation. I know you guys will be watching some film.
I'll text you sipping some good beverage and I'll let you know a tackle I'm watching.
Yeah, you're like, hey, Trevor gave me his ultimate login. He said that you had a password to give me too. Yeah.
If Trevor gives me the ultimate login, I'm never coming back. I'm just staying on that ship.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Sounds good, man. We will be back then a week after this next week and taking a little break. But until then, thanks, everybody, for listening, as always, to another episode of the Yins No Ball podcast.